This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Scotch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Tulip Fever, Unlocked, A Boy Called Poe, Goon, The Last of the Enforcers, I Do Until I Don't, and Jackals. A whole bunch of films that are smaller that are being released on this Labor Day weekend. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and some box office predictions, and I'll also be talking about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is also being re-released back in theaters in a 4K restoration this weekend on its 40th anniversary. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
One more celebrity death to talk about in the long line of celebrity deaths we've been having, and that is Tobe Hooper. He passed away this week. He was 74. He died of natural causes. And, you know, all these horror icons have been passing away in the last 2 years. I mean, I'm not just talking about directors, but people like Christopher Lee. I remember he passed away not too long ago. You had Wes Craven. You had George Romero just recently pass away. And now, of course, you got Tobe Hooper. And it's sad to see these guys go. Part of the reason they're all passing right now is because they all kind of came up through the ranks together. Well, maybe not Christopher Lee. He was much older. But people like Craven and Hooper and Romero, they were all sort of getting their feet wet in the late 60s, early 70s. And many of them have gone through transformations. People like Wes Craven, of course, he had changed some of the things he did. And I mean, he was doing really shock cinema early on, and then he did a little more pulp cinema. He actually tried doing regular movies as well. And what's funny about Tobe Hooper is he became a horror director because he created one of the most legendary horror films ever, which is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre back in 1974. But a lot of these guys didn't go in determining that they were going to be a horror movie director. That's just sort of where their path went. Romero was the same way. Romero wasn't necessarily wanting to become the grandfather of the dead. He was just going in there to make movies, and this was an opportunity at that time. And when it came to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, talk about a low budget film. And the story goes that Hooper was at a hardware store in a big long line, and this is what gave him the inspiration for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, as he saw a display of chainsaws. And he said, this would be an easy way to get through the crowd. You know, and that's sort of what gave him the idea of the title, which of course makes it, it's one of the best titles in horror movie history. But Tobe Hooper went on to do other things. And a lot of people will point to something like Poltergeist, which there's a huge debate on who directed Poltergeist because it is very Spielberg. It does feel very Spielberg. It doesn't feel very Tobe Hooper. I mean, Tobe Hooper went on to do Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 after Poltergeist, I believe. But Poltergeist, that was a big budget movie, and there's a lot of Spielberg influence, and there was some ghost directing going on because I think Spielberg was originally supposed to direct, and it was at the time when Spielberg was moving from doing directing, transitioning into doing producing as well. And then, of course, in the mid to late 80s, he started just producing a lot of things and slapped his name on and got that Amblin feel to it. But Poltergeist is another iconic horror movie featuring one of the creepiest clowns that you'll ever see. And you know, we've got It coming up soon. So all our minds are thinking about creepy clowns. So you'll be missed, Tobe Hooper. Rest in peace. Another piece of news that I found interesting this week was Patty Jenkins and James Cameron had a little bit of a row online. And it's one of those things where it wasn't between the two of them face to face. It was like one said this and then the other said this. Essentially, I'm not going to go through the quotes because you can find them online. But essentially, James Cameron downplayed Wonder Woman and said it wasn't as big of a deal. He said it wasn't an empowering female movie. And Patty Jenkins responded. I felt it was kind of a shame that Patty Jenkins responded to that, because the only thing that gives that power is to respond to it. The only thing that makes his statement have any sort of weight to it is if she responds to it. And what her response should have been like, look, you know, when Avatar 2 comes out and he actually makes another freaking movie, I'll respond to him. But I mean, I side with Patty Jenkins on this one. Ultimately, Wonder Woman is a great movie, a great female empowerment movie. And Cameron hasn't released a movie since 2009. So, you know, who cares what Cameron thinks at this point? He's just doing his own thing. The final piece of news I wanted to talk about, and this isn't even like headline news. I was looking at the box office. We're coming to the end of the summer and everyone's like, oh, look at how terrible Hollywood did. Well, there are some hits out there that people have been playing off as bombs because of how they've performed domestically. But these are worldwide hits. Pirates of the Caribbean 5, even though it wasn't a huge blockbuster here, it's made almost $800 million worldwide. Transformers 5, even though it was kind of a dud here, made $604 million. Now, that's nowhere near the $1 billion that Part 3 and 4 did. But still, it's still counting out there. The Mummy, which everyone talked about as being the big flop of the summer, $408 million and counting worldwide. It's a international hit. XXX3 is also, I've talked about that one a lot. That thing barely blipped in America back in like January. It's still in the top 20 or something like that with $346 million. Leap, which came out last week, which flopped, $87 million worldwide. And then Valerian, which is currently the number one movie internationally. That's at $173 million and counting. Now, it's not made back its budget, but it's on its way to. So this is the thing. Next time you see an article about how poorly Hollywood's doing and how movies aren't making money, got to remember, you got to look at it in a worldwide context because that's how movies are made. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Leatherface. I was just talking about Tobe Hooper. Here is the latest in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise. Opens on October 20th.
You let those boys go this instant.
He's not under arrest. He's under protection.
What are you talking about?
I'll take all yours, Vern. All of them.
The state of Texas instituted an endangered child care program. Keeping them here is safer for everyone.
You show them who you are.
Now, I liked Chainsaw Massacre, or whatever the last one was, that came out a couple years ago. I actually thought that was interesting. I couldn't figure out what era it took place in, because I think somebody actually had a cell phone, but it felt like it was shot in the 70s, and I actually thought that was a decent Texas Chainsaw movie. This is them trying to reboot the Leatherface Texas Chainsaw franchise. My big complaint about Texas Chainsaw for so long has been, while the first movie's fantastic, there's not a whole lot of depth to it. The other slasher franchises like Friday the 13th and Halloween and even Nightmare on Elm Street, there's a lot to mine in Nightmare on Elm Street. And Friday the 13th gets a little silly, but it does kind of fall into a camp level. Texas Chainsaw is so grisly that there's not much more you can do. You can't make it more horrifying than chopping people up with chainsaws. So this one's getting a smaller release. It's actually going to be, I believe it's like an on-demand limited thing. But I'm kind of curious to see where they go, kind of trying to mine the history of Leatherface. The next one I want to hit real quickly is Super Troopers 2. I have to do this because it was a big release of the trailer. It opens on, of course, April 20th, 420.
License and registration?
Aren't you the two that pulled me over before?
Beg pardon?
How are you Mounties now? Or should I say Meounties?
Hang on. Do you really not remember this guy?
I have no idea who he is.
You know, I heard everything you said.
I wasn't a huge fan of Super Troopers, mainly because I don't smoke pot, and I wasn't stoned in the early part of the 2000s. I think that was kind of the target market for Super Troopers, and that's what made it do well on VHS. It's sort of like, it's the dude wears my car, only from the other side, from the police officer sort of thing. I thought Super Troopers was cute. I'm curious to see whether this one's going to be good. I mean, this long for a sequel seems, it could go either way. I don't know. We'll see. That opens on April 20th. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Tulip Fever and a boy called Poe. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about some movies that are coming out this week. Labor Day weekend is a notoriously slow time for movies. If you look historically, August itself is a slow time for movies. And I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. This is more of a typical August. Now, we don't have a Suicide Squad, and we don't have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and we don't have Guardians of the Galaxy, which over the last 4 or 5 years have really made August its own little tentpole. This was a very typical August that we had. And even though Labor Day, in a lot of ways, people look at it very similar to Memorial Day, what's a 3-day weekend, it bookends the school year. A lot of people are doing other things on Labor Day weekend. There's football starting up. There's last-ditch efforts to do summer things. You know, whereas in Memorial Day is a big movie time because you have all summer to do all the summer stuff. This is your last chance to go camping. This is the last chance to have a cookout, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of people not spending time in movie theaters. And it is not uncommon to see a weekend with no movie hitting $10 million, or maybe just one, or just barely breaking $10 million. It's a slow time for movies, and this is a very typical Labor Day. The only big release, brand new release, is Tulip Fever, which wasn't even screened widely. And not only that, they didn't do Thursday night shows. But let's just talk about this real quick. A woman changes identities to hide from her caustic husband and run off with an artist.
In 1634, Amsterdam was captivated by a flower. Rich and poor gambled on the tulip market. Sophia was a beautiful orphan, chosen by one of the richest men in the city.
Tulip business. I think it's the answer to my problems. If I were rich, I could take you away.
He would find us.
This feels like an award bait movie. I mean, it's a period piece. It's got Alicia Vikander and Judi Dench. Both of them have won Academy Awards. Christoph Waltz in it. He's won an Academy Award. It seems really odd that it's dropping on Labor Day weekend. If they had more confidence on it, they would have pushed it later. Especially, it's a Weinstein movie. And the Weinsteins are well known for knowing how to manipulate the award season. But they're also notorious about dumping things out there when they don't think it's going to go anywhere. Alicia Vikander does a period piece, one or two every year. You expect to see her in this. And it feels like the throwaway release. It's kind of going out there unopposed in terms of big movies. Aside from the re-release of Close Encounters, which, I mean, I don't know how much money that's going to bring in. So, like I said, I get no sense at all that the studio, which is the Weinsteins, have any confidence on this. Because movies that tend to come out in September aren't ready for award season. You got to wait till October before people start taking award season seriously. The trailer really pushes it as a thriller, but I don't know how thrilling this is going to be. So I'm going to have to say that because they didn't screen it and they didn't even do Thursday shows, Tulip Fever gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about a movie I have seen. And that is A Boy Called Poe. After the untimely death of his wife, a man struggles with raising his autistic son.
Poe, can you tell us what the capital city of Mississippi is?
Hey, spaceman, the teacher asked you a question.
We've all become quite concerned about Poe's declining situation.
What's wrong with you, freak?
He has autism. My son won't give me a hug, but that doesn't mean I love him any less.
What if I can't do this, Ben?
What I don't want you to do is to give up.
There's a residential treatment center.
You want me to put Poe in a home?
What do you intend to do if your son continues to drift? He's moving somewhere in his mind.
Now, this is directed by John Asher, who is best known as an actor. he's one of those people, you know, like Timothy Van Patten, who got to start acting, but then ended up graduating into directing and actually is making more of a career of it that way. It stars Christopher Gorham. He was in that show Covert Affairs that was on the USA Network. He played a blind guy. Now, the whole point of this movie is to understand autism. And look, I mean, I know autistic people. I know people who've got autistic kids. And that's a challenge. And I say that in just a very pure sense of the word. It's a challenge because people who are autistic, they look at the world differently. They see and they sense and they experience the world differently. And I commend it for trying to give a look at what it's like for an autistic person to deal with the world. But they only deal with that a sliver. It's more about this father learning to deal with his autistic son. Though the wife was the one who took care of the kid, and then she got cancer. And the problem is, this character, the guy who Christopher Gorham plays, the father, he's a terrible dad. Because the kid's like 10 or 11 or something like that, or 9 or 10. So he's had the kid for a while, and it's clear he has zero idea how to deal with him. And I don't have any respect for that. I don't have any respect for fathers who don't know how to deal with their kids. Whether your kid has autism or not. I've seen dads that have no idea how to deal with their kids. I've known dads who won't change a diaper. And I have zero respect for that. I take care of my kids. I raise my kids. I've changed plenty of diapers in my life. And you just learn how to relate to your children. I have zero respect for parents that don't relate to their kids because they're not willing to put the time in for that. And it's clear that that's what was going on with his father in this movie. Now, that's part of his growth and his character. But I'm like, no, I'm sorry. It's a little bit too little too late at 9 years old when you become a single parent to have to learn how to deal with your kid, especially when it's a special needs kid. And then when you look at this in the backstory, the mom had cancer because, you know, she had passed away. It wasn't like a car accident. Well, I'm like, who was taking care of the kid then? I mean, I could understand maybe if you just were lazy about it, but then when your wife has cancer, you know that you need to take on the responsibilities, but it's clear he doesn't even know how to feed the kid because the kid will only eat mac and cheese. Then he doesn't even tell the kid that the mom's dead. He just is like, oh, mom's not here. Well, she's not here and she's not coming back. I'm like, at a certain point, just because the kid's autistic doesn't mean the kid doesn't understand the world in a certain way. And then on top of it, they try to make the kid's condition, being autistic, they try to give it more significance than it is. They try to make it like this is what makes him this almost otherworldly being. And that bothers me. And it's the same reason it bothers me when you see a lot of TV shows that have like an autistic kid. They have the autistic character have some almost superpower. They're like a computer genius, but they're just a little weird and quirky. And I'm like, here's the thing, especially severe autism. They're not superheroes. This is a condition, and this is a huge struggle for them and for the family. The attitude that these shows sometimes have is like, we'll deal with all these other problems because you're such a computer genius. Well, what do you do with an autistic kid that isn't a computer genius? What do you do with an autistic kid who can't count cards? Because that's the vast majority of them. It's like the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You know, Rudolph, you have this freakish nose, but we love you because suddenly we found a use for it. And that's not a good message to send. And that's ultimately the message it's sending. But when the reality is autism is a real thing and it doesn't make life easier for you. And you have to learn to understand it and respect it and realize that that's how that person is. And that they're not a superhero, that they're not suddenly have this connection to a greater thing. They have trouble processing information in a world that most people do differently. And you have to learn to deal with that and all the good and bad that comes with it. Plus, this movie just is extremely corny and goofy and silly. And like, he's in school and they're like, we're trying to mainstream him. I'm like, no, this kid has a serious condition. This kid is not at a point that he's even close to being appropriate to be mainstreamed. And they ignore the bullying. It's so simplistic. It's not a good movie. So I'm going to have to say that A Boy Called Poe, while it has very good intentions, still sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Unlocked, Goon, The Last of the Enforcers, and I Do Until I Don't. Because we can, can! Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare.
In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk more about some movie reviews. I'm actually covering a bunch of movies this week because there's a lot of little ones coming out around the country, either on demand or some of them, like this one I'm going to be talking about soon, I Do Until I Don't. That's actually getting kind of a big release. It's just completely under everybody's radar. Since Hollywood isn't releasing the big movies and they didn't screen the one that was, let's talk about the smaller ones that I have seen. And one of those is Unlocked. A CIA agent in London struggles to track down a terrorist among a sea of traitors and enemies.
The prisoner gave a go order for an attack on an American target in the UK. It's thought to be biological.
We have two other members of his mosque in custody. And like you, they have a long, dark plane ride in their future. Tell me the target.
I'm just supposed to deliver a message!
Sir, this is not a secure line.
We need you for an emergency assignment in London. We've got a prisoner waiting.
Well, I'm already on it.
We haven't informed London Station.
Sir, we have been penetrated.
This one stars Noomi Rapace. I've always had kind of a thing for Noomi Rapace. And it's not just because of her Elizabeth Salander days with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I find her compelling as an actress. I think that she's got the grit to kind of play the badass. Like she did in Prometheus, and we're talking about like American movies. She doesn't get as many American movies, and I think a lot of it, the accent is that she has because she's Swedish. Her accent impedes her from getting big roles. Plus, she's like 4 feet tall. She is a tiny, tiny woman. And she's not classically attractive the way Reese Witherspoon she's very attractive, but she's almost pixie-like in that. So I think that's caused problems for her getting leading roles in America because she doesn't fit into that sort of preconceived notion of what a leading woman is. But I think she's great. I think she does a great job in this movie. She's actually the best thing in the film. Well, I mean, actually it has a great cast because you've got John Malkovich kind of basically playing a John Malkovich character. Michael Douglas playing a very Michael Douglas character. Toni Collette shows up as like her handler. I like the cast. Orlando Bloom's in it. I'll forgive the movie for that. Orlando Bloom, it seems to be slumming it. I mean, he's not as attractive as he was 10 years ago when he made the first Pirates movie. But ultimately, it's directed by Michael Apted, who he actually did one of the James Bond movies. I think like Tomorrow Never Dies or The World Is Not Enough. So he's done these international action thrillers, and this one works for what it is. I mean, it's got some good action, done very low budget, but it's a European-based movie, so it feels like that international action movie. Now, if you want to see something with big, huge action set pieces, you know, something closer is going to be like The Hitman's Bodyguard. It doesn't reach that level, but sort of this under-the-radar action movie. I found this perfectly passable for sort of like, you know, a matinee type show. It's not great, but it's disposable international action. So I'm going to have to say that Unlocked kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Goon, the Last of the Enforcers. After sustaining a tragic injury, a kind-hearted brawler returns to hockey to help out his old teammates.
She looks like a beautiful tiny mushroom person.
So cool.
You house baby.
The Highlanders have traded for star forward Anders Kane.
It's my team now.
I need to protect my team.
Hello, sir. Can you train me?
Train you to what?
Teach me to fight with my left.
How many times do I have to tell you? Just the left.
Doug Glatt back as a Highlander.
Good for you, kid.
40. It's done.
Goon came out 4 or 5 years ago, and it starred Sean William Scott as a bouncer who then learns to skate and become the enforcer on this team, this hockey team, and he's all about fighting. Both these movies are made for hockey fans. It's for the visceral hockey fan. It's for people who like to see the fights, who like to see it be not just because of the strategy of the game, but they want to see blood, and they want to see teeth bounce, and they want to see stuff splatter against the walls. It's a brawler hockey fight movie. And the first film, me not being a hockey fan, I actually kind of had a soft spot for it, because even though it was about hockey and it was extremely violent and it was all about the fighting, the character that Sean William Scott plays, this goon character, there's a lot of heart to him. He's kind of a little bit simple-minded, but he's a nice guy. And that's the charm I found in that first movie. It wasn't about the hockey for me. It was about this really, really just genuinely nice guy going through life. Well, this one still has the same character, and Sean William Scott's good in it. And actually, Liev Schreiber comes back as he's basically the Apollo Creed character from the first movie. He was the adversary of the first movie, and he kind of helps him out in this movie. He comes back, and he's actually really good. I used to not like him much as an actor, but I think he does a great job in this movie. So they work off each other well. But this movie is less about the kind-hearted soul of this guy living in this juxtaposition of this incredibly violent game, and is more just about fighting. And so I get why this is connecting with some hockey fans, but for me, it's just, it's mean-spirited at times. I don't find it particularly funny. They minimize his character quite a bit. It's not his movie even, really. It kind of is, and that's the other thing, is I really have trouble finding out who's the main character in this movie. And it is just, at times, just about the fighting and the visceral nature of hockey, which I'm not into, and so I kind of just was turned off by it. So it doesn't have the same charm as the first movie, and that charm is what attracted me to the first one. So I'm going to have to say that Goon, the Last of the Enforcers kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about I Do Until I Don't. Three couples' lives are thrown into upheaval when a documentarian comes to town hoping to make a film about the failed concept of marriage.
My new project will propose love is not sustainable. Will you accept that marriage is dead?
I think he wants to have sex with my sister.
Is she local?
Yes, she rarely wears a bra.
What?
Yeah.
Meet me in the bathroom in 5.
I don't know if I need 5 minutes to get there, hon. I'm gonna...
How often do you sleep with other people?
This is written and directed by Lake Bell, who is a very talented comedian, and she's very beautiful. She tried to break into like leading roles, but she's like 38. She's pushing 40, so I think she realizes sort of like the young ingenue roles are long gone for her. But she did movies like Over Her Dead Body, and she was in What Happens in Vegas. And she never quite found a niche and didn't kind of break out the way like Cameron Diaz, who was in What Happens in Vegas with her. But she's also a comedian, so she writes and directs her own stuff. And she did In a World a couple years ago, which was about voiceover artists. And I thought that was really interesting. But her movies, the ones she writes and directs, are very independently minded. They're not these big, broad dramas or these big, broad rom-coms or anything. But this is an interesting movie because it does tackle the modern version of marriage. And you have these three couples, and they're not as easily set apart as you normally they'll be like newlyweds, people who've been married for 10 years, and then people who've been married for 50 years. It's these three couples. It's her and her husband, played by Ed Helm. And then you've got her sister and her sister's open relationship hippie boyfriend. And then this couple, played by Paul Reiser and Mary Steenburgen, who've been together for years. And one of the things I like about this is it does show the cynicism of being married and the unsexiness of being married, and how you sometimes are not in sync, and how it can look like your marriage is going to fall apart. But it also has a certain level of optimism there. It's not an anti-love movie. It's not an anti-marriage movie. It's not even an anti-monogamy movie. It's a movie that acknowledges that there are some ugly factors in life. There are some unattractive things about life, and it challenges people to kind of get past them. It gets a little corny at times, but ultimately I thought this one had a lot of heart to it. And I like Lake Bell. I'd like to see her do more stuff. And this is a cute little rom-com in an independent way. And it's got a good cast. It's definitely worth checking out. It's worth taking a chance on this week. So I do Until I Don't kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Jackals, the weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Close Encounters of the Third. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies, wrapping up the big Labor Day show. Let's continue with the movie reviews. This is another one that's opening this week. It's in select cities, and it's in about a dozen or so cities, but it's also on demand. And that is Jackals. A family tries to reprogram their son who has been brainwashed by a cult, only to discover they are targeted by the cult itself.
Someone out there.
Hey! You're on private property.
Look at these pigs. Lined up for slaughter.
What did you do?
Where's the baby? We need all the babies we can get.
This is an interesting take on the home invasion horror movie. I'm talking about home invasion movies like The Strangers or Your Next. This is very grisly at times, and it does borrow from some of these because it's these characters in the cult, they wear masks, which in a way kind of is this mixture between The Strangers or even The Purge and like Donnie Darko, because one of them is like a rabbit mask. It's released by Shout Factory or Scream Factory because that's their sort of horror movie label. But this reminds me of the kind of movies that have been coming out under the radar. I'm not talking about stuff like Annabelle Creation or the Conjuring movies or Insidious or even stuff like Lights Out last year or Don't Breathe. This is more under the radar. This is the VOD, small theaters, like maybe 10 or 12 theater run. And those movies tend to be where the heart of horror is now. I'm talking about movies like It Follows. Your Next was one that ended up getting a wide release, but it didn't do well in wide release. But even movies like, I remember It Comes at Night, it's what It Comes at Night should have been. It Comes at Night came out earlier this year and it was billed as a horror movie and it didn't quite grab me as a horror movie. It was sort of a bait and switch horror movie. This one is a true full form horror movie that is, like I said, it plays off the home invasion trope. And it does so because instead of just being randomly selected by killers like The Strangers, there's a reason they're selected, because they recapture their son who was in a cult. And the reason that works is because they're not 100% innocent. I mean, you feel for them because they're trying to just get their son back, but there's a reason they're targeted by this cult. And it actually takes a while to figure out what's going on, because it does these bait and switches. You don't really know what's happening. And at one point you're like, should we be rooting for these people or should we be rooting for these people? And it gets grisly and it gets violent. You know, it's not a perfect horror movie, but it at times is unrelenting. And the characters set themselves up for failure because they're not very smart with how they begin to approach things. So ultimately, Jackals, it's an effective thriller, and it's a new spin and an interesting spin on the home invasion type of movie. So I'm going to have to say that Jackals kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Last week was low. Last week, it's going to be low again this week. The Hitman's Bodyguard won for a second week in a row with just over $10 billion. I mean, just like, it's like 10.26. And Leap was the highest grossing one, which is $4.7 million, which isn't great. I think that's actually lower than they expected. Birth of the Dragon was $2.7 million, just barely beat out the Mayweather versus Gregor Fathom event, which was $2.6 million in theaters. And All Saints was $1.5 million. None of these movies did terribly well. And don't expect anything more this week, because this week it's probably going to be Hitman's Bodyguard again. And I mean, what, like 6 million? None of these movies are going to make more than $10 million. That's even low for Labor Day weekend. It's going to be sort of like, this is going to be one of the first times it's happened that nothing made $10 million. Nothing hit double digits. Tulip Fever is the new one, and it's going to be lucky to break the top 10. It might be like 8 or 9 when all said and done. So this is going to be a low, this is a low week for movies. We're not getting much play. And with good reason. This is the way Labor Day has always been. So let's not start having a bake sale for Hollywood yet. They're making plenty of money. The theaters, maybe not as much. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Let's talk about Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Now, I know this is technically a theatrical release. They've done a 4K restoration of the original film. They're re-releasing it in theaters, and it's going to be your first time in years to get a chance to see this, at least in wide release, as a big screen movie. If you haven't seen it, now is your chance. Steven Spielberg directs this classic about alien abductions and its effect on several people around the country.
What do you want?
I just want to know that it's really happening.
Recently had a close encounter. Close encounter with something very unusual.
Who are you people?
Boys!
1, 2, 3.
I'm seeing this shape.
Damn it, I know this. I know what this is.
This means something.
Now, somebody like me who's in my 40s, I remember watching this in the movie theaters when it came out in 1977. That was the only way you could see a movie like this. The whole video market wasn't even around at that time. So it wasn't like a unique experience to watch it in theaters. There's a lot to love about this movie. It's classic Spielberg at a time before he kind of got older and softer, before he did his Lucas turn, where he was doing everything as cutesy. There's still a certain optimism from Spielberg with this movie. This was made in the 70s, so it was before the 90s. By the time the 90s hit, the aliens were not considered benevolent. All these movies, I think War of the Worlds was the first, like, evil alien movie that Spielberg directed. But, you know, he had the Close Encounters, which is more or less a first contact, they forget that they're kidnapping children, but it's a reaching out of them understanding cross-cultural from another planet. And then, of course, he follows up with E.T. 5 years later, which is another very kind and gentle, warm and squishy alien. The Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the first half is like a horror movie. And that's, I think, it's most powerful. It's kind of three different movies. It's this horror movie at the beginning where you have these mysterious creatures, something's happening from outer space, and the encounters that they have are terrifying. When they come after the kid in that house, that is a terrifying scene for not just a kid when I saw it when I was like 7 or 6, and it's also terrifying for a parent that something would come from the sky and take your only child. So and it's played as a horror movie. Then it turns into sort of this road adventure movie as Richard Dreyfuss' character tries to go figure out what's going on, and he's trying to get to Devil's Tower. And then it turns into the warm and squishy aliens love everybody at the end with close. I'm sorry, this movie's 40 years old. If you haven't seen it yet, I apologize. But I mean, in the trailers, it has the ending where the mothership comes over the Devil's Tower and everything. I mean, I've been to Devil's Tower. I remember I watched Close Encounters after I got back from Devil's Tower, which was about 15 years ago. And, you know, it's an epic movie. It is sort of like Spielberg's sci-fi version of Lawrence of Arabia, where it goes all over the place, and it's sweeping and it's grand. And even today, the special effects hold up. Even today, you can watch them, and the practical effects, It's a real good argument for practical effects, especially when they're on the road. There's a scene where they're on the road and the ships come flying through and they go through like a traffic stop or a toll booths. These images are fantastic and hold up compared to the digital effects that they have today, to the point that it even looks a little more real because the digital effects, they sometimes put too much detail and too much movement to them. This is definitely worth seeing. It's especially in the big screen. It's a fantastic film. So if you haven't seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind, now's your chance to see it on the big screen and get the full theatrical experience. Close Encounters totally rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Couple other new movies on DVD and Blu-ray. We've got Born in China, which is, of course, the Disney nature film about the panda bears and the snow leopards and the monkeys. It's a charming Disney nature type thing. It's not too harsh, which nature documentaries can be. It's G-rated, but it's charming and cute. There's also the re-release of The Lion King on Blu-ray. It's not the first time they've had it on Blu-ray, but they're bringing it back from the vault. Get it now if you want to be able to watch it before The Lion King movie comes out when they do the photorealistic live action. There's other ones out. There's The Dreadful Baywatch, Star Wars Rebels, Gotham Season 3, and finally, Bring It On Worldwide Cheer Smack, in case you haven't gotten enough Bring It On movies. That is it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about creepy clowns with Stephen King's It. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.